Ladies and gentlemen, we would like to welcome Mr. Keenan Acton to the show. This is genuinely a first for the show because we've never had a guest with such, I suspect, a unique circumstance as you, Keenan. So you're very welcome to the roast.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
To the listeners that don't know who you are, can you tell me, like, in a sentence, why you're here today?
Yeah, I'm here today because I was once living the childhood dream, the life that I always wanted to live, until a major medical incident happened and I've now had to adjust and learn a completely new way of life that I've never had to live before.
That's like an insanely well-versed answer. I couldn't have done better than that myself. You're an absolute natural. So that's amazing. Okay, so just full disclosure, Keenan, I saw your story online and I was absolutely blown away by it. Obviously, with the weekly roast and the podcast that we have here, we've started like bringing in interesting people and people who have led interesting lives and interesting stories and whatnot. And Hyrox has just completely swept the country, swept the world. These fitness and endurance competitions are ubiquitous across Ireland and, yeah, the globe at the minute. And I saw this story and it was, the headline was something like, I think it could have been those bloody spoofers in the BBC, and it was like, you know, Wrexham gym owner goes into coma during Hyrox and now can see the future. And I was like, well, there you go. We've just got our first guest. This is I'll be totally honest. I was like, this is fucking sensational. This is like unreal. So I got the producer to get on to you. And then I read into your story and I was like, wow, there is so much more to this than I initially thought. So to give people context, you were, do you call it the incident or how do you refer to what happened when you had the Hyrox?
I don't know. It's hard. I just call it the medical episode. I think because so much happened, I haven't really got a single thing to call it. So I just like to call it the episode.
Okay. So prior to the episode, let's just set the scene. You are, you're a young man, you're 26. Yep. And yeah, just tell us about your day-to-day life before the accident or the episode. Sorry, mate.
Yeah. So before it was the childhood dream. And if I break down into that, my dream was to be the first face that people seen when they came to the gym in the morning and the last face people seen when they went home. And it was to build a community. It wasn't necessarily just to own a gym. The childhood dream was to build a community where people could feel part of something, something that gave them a purpose, something that they had somewhere to go and forget about everything else that happened in the outside world. And we've done that and we've built that in many different ways, through doing socials, through knowing our members and having a really good relationship with our members, different to what other gyms will have with theirs. And that's what life was. Life was getting up at 4:30, 5:30 in the morning, being at the gym for 5 or 6, depending on the day. It was seeing people in the morning. It was rushing home. It was taking the kids to school. It was rushing straight back to the gym. It was admin. It was either training for myself. It was picking the kids up from school, rushing straight back to the gym for more work. And I was kind of hooked on it. And it's not until...
Were you constantly training yourself as well as running the business of the gym, obviously?
Yeah, like, so I was training 10 to 15 times a week. I was completely hooked on what was the dream and this life that I wanted to live. And I'm not going to say what happened, which we'll get into in a minute, I'm sure, was a blessing, because it wasn't, because what it put people through, it wouldn't be fair for me to call it a blessing. But I believe everything happens for a reason, and I think everything has a positive to take away from it. And I think what I thought was the dream really was probably the dream for a young Keenan who didn't have the life of an adult with commitments and stuff. And I think it's now made me look at life completely differently. And life now is better than what it was before.
And with regards to the training, I mean, when you say the dream, right, are we talking about like, okay, the business side is one side, which is brilliant and successful. Yeah. And you have the community focus with it. And that's just fantastic. But in terms of the training, I mean, what are you, or what were you at least aspiring to? Was it like to have a six pack to look hench? Was it to push yourself and go more than you did the week before?
For me, training's never really been about a six pack or looking good. If then things happen,
same as me, mate. That's what I've.
You know. To me, that's a bonus. I'm a perfect example of someone who trained 10 to 15 times a week, but would still smash a Chinese on a Friday and an Indian on a Saturday.
Okay.
Isn't great advertising.
That's food you're referring to, I hope. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because otherwise we've got a problem here, brother.
Yeah, we're all talking about food. So for me, being in shape was never really the thing. I suppose what I wanted to do was to just be part of and to inspire others in my community. I wasn't too fussed. If I went to a competition and I just beat what I did last time, I was happy. I was relatively fit. I was the fittest I've ever been. I competed in an okay standard. I wasn't number one in the world, and I probably was never going to be number one in the world. But for me, the dream was building the community, and doing that was part of that dream. Me being part of it. So it's practice what you preach, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
People to do stuff that I'm not willing to do myself. So that was my ambition with the training. And I can't coach other people and create a community where it's meant to help other people become a better version of themselves if I can't do it for myself. So that's what...
And this is probably a stupid question, but whenever like somebody goes from being sort of like a regular gym goer, okay, and they're doing... I'm not, as you can tell, like not super well versed in that language, but they're doing weights, they're doing like cardio, whatever. Transitioning from that into, say, HYROX and the sort of more, because HYROX is a brand, isn't it? Like what we're actually talking about is like endurance training, or what is the term for that?
Yeah, so really you'd call it hybrid training, I suppose.
Or
performance-based training, but performance-based can cover a wide range of things. If you're going to talk about HYROX, sorry, go on.
So no, yeah. Well, I suppose what I'm wondering is like how much more taxing on, because obviously we're working our way towards the episode. And I mean, how much more taxing is like the hybrid training on the body versus, say, just standard quote unquote gym classes and whatnot?
Yeah, so it can take it out of you, but it also all depends on your program and your structure that you've got in place. Does your nutrition and your refueling complement the training that you're doing? Your 10 to 15 sessions, are they structured correctly? Are you doing X amount of weight sessions to make sure that you're strong enough to support your joints and doing the HYROX sessions? If you were doing 10 to 15 sessions a week of just battering your body, doing HYROX sessions, doing runs, and you weren't doing anything to support it, then you're just asking for an injury, aren't you? So it's all about the structure that's put into your program and how you then adapt to that. But on the flip side, if you're someone who trains 3 weight sessions a week, and all of a sudden you train up to 10 sessions a week and X amount of it is HYROX and blah, 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 you've obviously also got to ease yourself into it. You wouldn't just dive straight in.
Sure. So, I mean, to be honest, even anecdotally, I've got an example of that. Like I have arthritis, I have psoriatic arthritis, and only a few weeks ago, for the first time in 2 years, I was able to exercise again because I'm on a biological drug and that's finally actually working on my knee joints. But I went out for a 5K run and I felt amazing. And then I went out 2 days later, I went out for another one. I felt great. So I just sort of got into the routine that I'm doing one every second day for about 2 weeks. But to your point, because I had spent 2 years not working out or exercising, the muscles were basically non-existent. So I've now fucking injured myself because I basically went from nothing being... I can barely get up the stairs. It's a complete nightmare. Like, you know, and that's just a classic example of I'd gone from nothing to 90. So I do hear you. So then, okay, talk us through you. So this HYROX, you had competed in others, right? You'd competed in other ones and you were...
This HYROX was actually the first HYROX. Competed in competitions similar and hybrid.
Similar competitions.
Yeah, similar competitions.
Sorry, yes.
In North Wales, running events and stuff like that. This was the first actual HYROX branded event that I was going to do. And we went and held it down with X amount of members. But for me, specifically for the HYROX brand... Not
this was your first
brand. This was the first, yeah.
So you wake up on the morning, you feel fine. Did you sleep the night before? Were there any things that hadn't gone the way that you would have liked in advance of the event?
No, not. I'll be honest with you. One thing it has done to me is I've got no memory. I've got no memory of the day. I've forgotten a lot of things that happened even that year. I don't remember my nephew being born a few weeks before. Don't remember the competition that I did. 3 weeks before, and an event 2 weeks before. So a lot of it, I don't actually remember. The only memory I've got from the day is when me and the wife got there, at the time fiance, we parked up to go in, and all I remember on our way in, the toilets were outside in like a building at the NEC car park in Birmingham, and I needed the toilet on the way in. And the only memory I've got is stopping at that toilet. And then before I know it, I woke up how many weeks later.
It's quite perverted that that's what you remember. No, I'm joking.
Is that where my mind is?
So what you know now is that you went into the High Rocks, you started it as planned, and at what point into the event did you collapse?
So apparently, from what I've been told, straight from the first station, I apparently got back and was telling those that were watching that had travelled from the gym and my partner who was stood there. Apparently, I was saying that I felt really hot and I looked really hot. And obviously, I've carried on with the event. Me being the person that I am, I've got quite a strong mindset and I believe that the body always gives up before the mind. And maybe I took that approach a little bit too far on this occasion, but... So I've carried on with the event, and as the event was going on, I've been told that apparently my eyes started to roll, specifically on the lunges. I've been told that my legs were really shaky, and I was near enough falling over trying to do a lunge. And then it was the last run of the event, so the run after the one before the wall balls, we went out, and apparently I went out sprinting to a point where my business partner, who I was doing it with, couldn't catch up with me. And he's a good runner, good standard of fitness. And apparently I just sprinted off, and then he got to a point and caught up where I was on the floor. He went to tell everyone, and that's apparently where it's been recorded that I had two seizures, and then the ambulance crew took me into the medical tent, and then obviously that's where I was blue lighted off to the hospital.
And that's like everybody's worst nightmare in terms of family and friends that are there and assumedly expecting and worrying about the worst potential outcome in that moment.
Well, when we first got there, Liv has told me there was a lady in front of us, in front of the barrier, and she collapsed and had a seizure in front of us. So this was way before I was getting involved. I'd gone to support people beforehand throughout the day. And this lady dropped in front of us and had a seizure. And Liv apparently said to me, "Oh, I've got a bad feeling that you shouldn't be doing this." Just the way the lady just completely dropped in front of us. And Liv said from that very moment, she felt uneasy throughout the whole day before I'd even started.
Wow. So you go to hospital, rush to hospital. And what happens then once you arrive there?
Yeah, so I was told that... Everyone thought I was going to go in, have some fluids put in me because I'd had the seizure, and the next amount of hours later or the next day, whatever, would be going home. So apparently I got taken into the Heartland Hospital in Birmingham. Wife came in, they were putting some stuff in me, whatever it is they were doing, and she was asked to leave. And so the wife left and she was sat outside, and she said an hour later she came to find me to be told that I was in an induced coma in ICU, and she was a bit like, what the hell's going on? So she obviously then went out to tell our friends, because some people went with her to the hospital, and everyone's like, what's going on? And then she's then gone on to see what it is that's happening, and she's been told that I had multiple organ failure, stage 4 kidney failure, swelling on the brain, so there wasn't enough room between my head and my brain, and I also had severe rhabdomyosis, which is a condition where all the muscles in the body just shut down. So for about a week to two, well, for 1 to 2 weeks, my catheter bag was this jet black liquid, and they said it was this muscle draining out my body, and that was caused by the severe rhabdomyosis, which rhabdomyosis can be caused by extreme exertion. So that would make sense.
That's just absolutely horrific for Liv. And I mean, even hearing the litany of things that went wrong, it's sort of overwhelming. To try and wrap your head around that is a lot, particularly if they think that it was triggered by overexertion, or can they only speculate still?
Yeah, so well, they've said they'll never 100% be able to tell me why exactly it happened. So I got moved to the QE, the Queen Elizabeth Hospital, which is the biggest ICU in Europe, but that again is in Birmingham. And they wanted to move me there as quick as possible due to it's a new hospital. I think there's also a QE in London and Manchester, these new hospitals, and they've got the better equipment, and they were just waiting for a bed. And they transferred me over there, and I spoke to the doctors when I'd come back round to ask obviously what had gone on, what had happened, and their words were, they've never seen anyone's body do exactly what my body was doing. And bear in mind, this is the biggest ICU in Europe, and they were reaching out to doctors across the country to see if anyone could say, I've seen this worked, this didn't, blah blah blah. And they went as far as having two doctors up in Edinburgh, and they couldn't find any doctor to advise them what to do. So they said they just had to do whatever it was it needed doing for my body at that time, and it was just pray for the best. But they told Liv on 6 occasions that I was finished. On one occasion, they called her back in out of visiting hours to have an hour with me because they thought that was the end. They tried to wake me up 3 weeks later where I had a cardiac arrest. So they had to get me going again with the defib and put me back into the coma. And it was, if I remember correctly from what I've been told, it was a Friday where Liv was told, don't look past the next 24 hours on this one specific occasion. It was apparently more serious and more formal than the others. And come the Sunday, the same consultant asked her for a chat again and said, look, I don't know what to tell you. His body's turned around. We've never seen it happen before. No transplants, no surgeries. We were told that stage 4 kidney failure is irreversible. And if I did make it out of there, then I'd need treatments. I'd be at the hospital for appointments every week. I'd need dialysis 3 to 4 times a week. And I've been told that everything's fit and normal and back in working condition. I've got a few little niggles. So I've been diagnosed, funnily enough, as what you were saying before, with osteoarthritis in my knees. I've got to go for further appointments on my ankles. So the body doesn't move like it used to. I can't train like it used to, which was a big adjustment for myself. But when you look at the bigger picture of what could have been and the things that the people around me were being told, I'm not in a position to complain. I can't moan.
So bring us forward then to the day that you woke up or you were brought around. Where was Liv and who called her?
So, do you know what? I've got to give credit to Liv. She's been supportive anyway from the day we got together in me being able to achieve the gym, opening a second facility and so on. She didn't leave my side for the whole time. From 11 in the morning till 7, I think, was the visiting hours. She was by the bed every second of every day. She stayed in Birmingham. She had accommodation right outside the hospital. My father-in-law came up for 4 weeks and stayed with her to support her. The mother-in-law moved into our house, obviously in Chester, X amount of hours away to stay with the kids, try and keep life as normal as possible for them. But she didn't leave my side. So, you know, for how traumatic it would have been for her anyway to be told the things that she was, to be sat there watching it happen, to have the strength that she did to stay by my side through it all, I think is something else.
Yeah. No, that's really powerful. So you woke up. And, like, stupid question of all stupid questions, what was your first cognizant sort of conscious thought, like, when you were like, oh, like, what did it feel like? Did you go, where the hell am I? What happened? Did you know what happened? Did you have any sense of what happened? Did the world that you woke up to feel like more of a dream than the world that you had been inhabiting? Because obviously we want to get into now the feelings and the, I don't want to call them prophecies, or maybe I do, but what was your initial thought as you came around? How long did it take?
So, well, apparently, from what I've been told, they told Liv they were going to start waking me up, and they did it when visiting hours was coming to an end. So Liv had to leave and go back to the accommodation, and she was really worried because the last time they did this, I had a cardiac arrest, and she got called back for the final hour as such. So she was worried as anything, and then it was the next day when she's come in for visiting hours. I actually remember sitting there and everything was dead faint because you're drugged up to hell and they slowly ease you off whatever it is you're on that they keep you to keep you in this induced coma. And I remember just seeing her step from behind the nurse as she was coming in. And I remember just going, there she is.
And oh my God.
Pointing at her. And from what I've been told, because Liv would call up and say, how is he? How's he getting on? Because you can't come in till 11, which in theory is quite late. I get it because they've got to do their rounds and stuff. But so Liv would call them in the morning and say, how's he been through the night, blah, blah, blah. And a friend of mine, when they came up or they sent in the post, I can't remember, I think they must have come up, they sent or brought up a photo, one of my favourite photos of Liv and the boys, which we had at the time, the two boys sat on a bench in the park. And apparently I'd spent all morning just pointing at the photo to the doctors as if to be like, Liv and the kids and blah, blah, blah. So that's my first official memory of coming back round. And then they've got, when these things happen, they've got a nurse or a doctor that comes round and asks you your name, where are you? And she said, what's your name? I said, Keenan Acton. And she said, where are you? And I said, the hospital. And she said, which hospital are you in? And I said, oh, even if this didn't happen, I don't know Birmingham. So I wouldn't be able to tell you anyway. And that told me I was at the QE. And she said, what time of year is it? And I said, oh, we're just coming into November. And that's when she said, oh, I'm really sorry, it's coming up to December. And that's when my head down. I was like, what the hell is going on? And then she asked me where we live. I said we lived on the Wirral. And I seen her look at Liv, and I knew from the look that something wasn't right. So yeah. Once she'd gone off, and I'd said to Liv, I said, babe, where do we live? And she told me the street that we lived on, and it was in Chester. And I knew what the street was. It's not like I forgot about it. It's just I thought we'd moved. And I said, but what do you mean? We've built a nice big glass house overlooking the water. He said, Keenan, we haven't. And I was like, well, in my head, I think it was the second night of being awake, the second or the third night of being awake, I had quite an emotional night. And I could finally, very faintly, see my phone and have a scroll. And I was having a look, and some of the support that we received was amazing. We had the gym that we've got, and the community came together and did a fundraiser to support my family through the time. We had different people across North Wales in the fitness industry doing events and seeing the support. And the hardest thing for me, what I struggled to process the most, it isn't what the body went through. It isn't what happened to me. It's not processing it, because at the end of the day, you've got to get through it. What am I going to benefit from sitting around crying about what happened? At the end of the day, it's happened. I can't change it. How do we bounce back from it is what's important. I've been given a second chance at life. I've got to do something with it. But what I struggle to process the most is the support that we received and what it put everyone else through. That's what I find really overwhelming. That's what gets to me the most in that aspect.
So you're coming back around and you're adjusting to this reality, and you are now aware that you've been in a coma and what has transpired over the last few weeks medically, and then you are now saying things to your partner, such as, we have a house that's glass fronted and whatnot. At what point do you become aware that some of the things that you've thought have happened just aren't real, in terms of, as far as people are concerned, that these things aren't real? And then what was the first moment that something that you had believed had happened, you know, that you'd been thinking during your coma turned out to be real, if that makes sense?
Yeah, so there was a lot of the coma, what I will say is, was quite dark and traumatic. And probably stuff that I wouldn't just dive into with people. And that stuff I knew straight from the off, no way could that be real. Some of it, I had visitors come and see me, and I'd ask them questions thinking, but I've seen this, and they would confirm it hasn't happened. And then there was part of the coma where Liv and I had had two babies, twins. And I'd come back round and I said to Liv, and this felt as real as anything. There was the house, there was the kids, and this was life. And I said to Liv, oh, how's the babies? And she said, and my friend Lee was there, I'll never forget it. I can still hear his laugh now. I sat in the chair at the end of the bed. And Liv said, do you mean Roman and River? And I said, no, the babies. We've had babies. And she said, we haven't. And my friend's laughing. And I'm probably getting quite annoyed and using language that I probably shouldn't have been using. And I said, get your Instagram out, because we announced it to the world. And I was convinced that we had these babies. And I was telling the doctors, saying, doesn't she look well, considering she's just given birth? And I was saying to Liv, what have work been like with you? And then saying, no, it doesn't matter, because you're on maternity leave. And then eventually I slowly realized that, obviously, Liv told me straight away, and Lee was telling me, and I had to quickly process that we didn't have this house, and there was no babies, and there was no twins. And it was like, I've literally lived a completely different life. And one thing I will say, my thing that I did with the BBC, they had me talking to a brain scientist to give the science perspective of why we see what we see when our mind is in these states and in these conditions. And what he said, I can connect to a lot of what happened. So the darker thing and the more traumatic stuff, the spaces of my life that I'm not proud of, should we say, and some of that did relate and connect to that. And then we've got a friend of a friend, and this gets really weird, who considers herself to be quite gifted, and everyone believes in what they believe in. And I didn't get an opportunity to say this. Well, I did say it, but it didn't make the cut. And she, when I was in hospital, because she lives next door to our friend, she's a neighbour, she knocked on our friend's house and said, don't worry, he's going to be fine. And she was like, what? And she had to tell your friends to stop worrying. Life's not going to be the same, and his body will never be the same again, but he doesn't need to tell everyone to stop worrying. And this is when I was at my worst. So it was like, what the hell is this lady going on about? And then since coming out, I've never met this lady. She never laid her eyes on me, still haven't to this day. She's somehow been connected and she went to our friend's house, or our friend went to her house next door, and she was messaging us, and she was messaging stuff. And what, to be fair, what she was saying did make sense of people coming through and, you know, whatever it is people believe in. And what she was saying did make sense. And then I got goosebumps because we got a message come through that said, "I'm with the spirit that looked after Keenan on the other side." And I was a bit like, "Well, what? Now what's going to come out?" And she told me back what I seen in my coma. And no word of a lie, she told me some of the information, the details that she told me, no one would know unless I told them. And some,
like what?
Just some of the darker stuff. Told me why I seen it. Told me the spirit was there to show me what doesn't matter anymore, what does matter in life, and apparently showed me my future to keep me strong and to show me what was coming. There was part of the coma experience at the end where I was put in a hut with an exercise machine. And during my coma, I believed, and this was the last memory that I've got, I believed I was in that hut because I was told I was going to die. And there was loads of these huts and you weren't allowed out of your hut. And if you were about to die, you got put in one of these huts. And she even told me about the hut and the bike that was in the hut. And she gave me some unreal information, details of what I experienced during that coma.
And Keenan, what do the doctors think about this? I mean, what's their perspective on, you know, when you come around and you're in this really unique situation, and even more unique in your circumstances, because as the doctors in the QE said, they'd never encountered somebody with this sort of the physical set of circumstances. What, like, A, are you provided with a counsellor as soon as you come around to say, listen, this is going to be a lot and, you know, we need to have a chat here because, you know, there might be a bit of, there might be a bit of adjusting. And also, I mean, if that once the line between, as anybody knows, I mean, the line, the thread that we all hang on to, that is reality, right? Like, once that's severed, you're sort of opening up the doors to basically anything. And what I'm trying to say is I can't imagine how disorientating it must be to be walking down a street and go, there's Simon. He got a hole in one in golf last weekend. You go up to congratulate him and actually it's Jack the Ripper. You know what I mean? Because you've just imagined. So like all of a sudden you'd start to question all of your reality. That must be super disarming.
Yeah, it is. And it's one of the, do you know what? I'm the type of person, I'd like to consider myself to be someone quite ambitious, quite driven and quite positive. And I always say the most stressful time in someone's life can only be the most stressful time in someone's life. And what I mean by that is if someone's had life easy their whole life, they become an adult. Yeah. And 1 month they didn't move money into their bank account, they've missed their electricity bill, and all of a sudden it's the end of the world and blah, blah, blah. I've had quite a few things from the age of 16 that, a few major events that I've had to try and come back from and pick myself up from. And so I've always been quite positive and I found a way to come back from them. And my outlook on life is now nothing can be more stressful than what we went through.
Yeah.
So all I had to do was recover and bounce back. Yeah, I had to process what had happened. When I was in the hospital, there was someone that came over with a piece of paper and they wanted me to rate my day out of 10 for each day and write down my feelings and what I was feeling. And I'll be honest with you, they came back 4 days later to get the piece of paper and said, Keenan, there's nothing on it. I said, yeah, and there won't be either. If I'm having a bad day, I'll tell you I'm having a bad day, but for now, I need to get better. There was one doctor, I'll remember him forever. He was a great doctor and a consultant. And he said to me, I said to him, I need to get home. I said, I've got kids at home. Christmas is coming up. I'm not spending it here. And he said, oh, you need to realize how ill you are. And I wish I never said it right. I can't believe I'm going to say it. It's really cheesy. And I turned around in this positive, need to get better mindset that I was and said, no, you need to realize that I'm not like everyone else and I'm going to get better and we're going to get me out of here. And the physios come over and I remember my first goal was to be able to stand up on my own for 30 seconds. And I remember trying to do it and I think I dropped on like 15 seconds and it felt like I'd been standing for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's the goals... quickly progressed and there was a
the recovery is just astonishing. I just find it hard to wrap my head around the your ability to experience something like that and to not be obliterated. I mean, the fact that you survived is a medical miracle, right? But psychologically afterwards to still be going, you know, to have the resilience, I think that's probably the better word, resilience. And But just on the sort of, would you call them visions?
The coma experience.
Yeah, the coma experience. So we refer to it as the coma experience. Is there any, like, medical stance on what individuals go through? And, like, how do they reconcile with that? Because, you know, your wife, obviously the most insane and profound thing about all of this is that you then are, your wife became pregnant with twins, right?
Yeah, they were 4 weeks old yesterday.
Congratulations. Like, that is absolutely amazing. And what did the doc, like, did the doctors have an answer for that? Like, when you obviously did the thing with the BBC and then you met with the neuro lad, you know, what is he saying? What is his answer to this?
So he can only talk from the science perspective, and science can only answer so many things. There's some things that happen that science can't answer, and as humans we can't answer. Was it a coincidence? Is it something else? All I can do is talk about my experience and how I perceive it. Now, I do believe I was shown what was coming to keep me strong in that moment.
Yeah.
I think to have this friend of a friend to come out and tell me back what I seen in the detail that she did, it's too much for me to sit there and say, no, it wasn't, you know? And from a doctor's perspective, again, I suppose that they go off science, don't they? They can only do what you know, science can tell them to do. And I think, you know...
Can I ask you something?
Yeah, go on.
Were you religious before the... what happened?
No, I wasn't religious. And
are you religious now?
Do you know what? It's been something that's in my mind, and I've been thinking, do I go to a church? And... Do I do it? Do I not? And I've never been religious, and I'm not sure. I don't think I would ever be fully converted and religious in the sense of believing everything that they say and what's happened in the past. Do I think there is something? Yeah, I think there's a power
greater than us.
I don't even know how to explain it. Someone was looking over me. Someone wanted to make sure I was okay. And it's hard because I've got a friend's mum. She lives in Mid Wales. He lives here. And originally she's from Essex, and she's very religious. And every couple of months or every month, whatever it is, she travels back to Essex to go to the church that she originally come from. And that's the level of religious that she is. And she said every Tuesday and every Sunday for a prayer session, 400 people in Essex were praying for me.
Wow.
I've got friends' parents who were religious that said they were praying every single night before they went to bed. I then had the experience that I had. So there's an element of, do I believe someone walked on water? Do I believe that someone separated the sea? I can't really, you know, that's not something I've seen, so I'm going to struggle to believe it. But in terms of what I've experienced, do I think there's got to be something? To what degree and to what level? Who knows? But I think there's got to be something, hasn't there? Because I can't go through something like I did and believe that there's nothing at all.
There certainly is no human explanation for what you've experienced. Well, Isn't that it? So as a result of all of this, you're now in a remarkably bizarre situation wherein you just are okay. Well, you're obviously celebrating the gorgeous birthday of your twins yesterday, you know, but you also just have to live a quote unquote life now. And I mean, how has all of this totally shifted your perspective? And will you be living a completely different life as Keenan Acton after these experiences? Like, obviously, the day to day will be somewhat impacted, but like, where's your head at and what's next? And after experiencing what you have, be it with a deity, another world, a spirit, whatever you want to call it, you know, or whatever it turns out to be, because none of us could know. Nobody living knows the answer, right? For sure. So what's next for you, both in your head and then also what will happen? And I'm sorry, that's not me saying who's going to win the World Cup.
I can see the future. I know what's coming.
Now that I've got you, mate, I want to put a fiver in Sandown on Thursday. So The plot twist of the century, by the way, would be, could you imagine this would be just the cruelest thing if me and Michael just sort of went, by the way, you're still in a coma, and just ended the interview. Yeah. This is all a no, I'm joking. So go on.
Brilliant. Life has changed. Life can't be what it was before, you know? Life used to be, like I mentioned, with all the training, it used to be on the weekend going for a 3-hour walk around the forest with the kids. Now, I can't walk for nearly half as long without being in pain. Life in terms of day-to-day and business has changed. My role within the business has changed. I've sold a chunk of the business, so I'm now minority holder of the business. My business partner is the one that's on the gym floor. He's the face of the business and he's operating them things. And to be honest with you, even that, in a way, is better for the business, because a business will only grow so much when you're constantly working in it. Yeah, so I've now got the opportunity to work on the business, which is what I am doing. And then in terms of the future and what does the future bring, it's hard. I'm kind of going through a phase in life where I'm lost, because I've never lived life in the way that I'm now living it. And in October, we're going to be 2 years, aren't we, since it happened. And as time goes by, I'm accepting it more. I'm processing it more, that this new way of life and what, you know, it was never life before. At first, it was hard. It was a struggle. I've had phases of going back to the gym floor and trying my best to be there. And, the body's just in agony. I'm knackered. If I get up early, I'm absolutely knackered. 2 hours later, yawning, needing a nap, which doesn't happen when you're a father of four. So life is different. And the future, what does the future hold? Who knows what the future holds? I'm open to opportunities if the opportunity is the right opportunity. My dream, I'll be honest with you. So I have gone through a phase of feeling lost and, you know, not fulfilled in life. And it's hard to say that, because since working on the business and not in it, we've opened the second facility. It's thriving in other areas and things that we've changed behind the scenes. We've got, Liv and I have been married. We've recently bought a house. We've just had our twins. So life is good. Life is great since everything that happened. But there's just that part of me isn't fulfilled. Something is missing. And you can always look for things, can't you? But I think you can't chase too hard, and sometimes things will fall into place, and what's meant to be for you, you will come across when you come across it. One thing I will say is, ever since doing my thing with the BBC, jumping on this today, doing the things of the talking, the podcasts, the interviews, it's felt like that gap has been filled. And, you know, I would absolutely love to somehow become a presenter or a host, whether that be podcast, radio, TV. I think I've got the face for radio. I think everyone will agree on that note. But I've loved doing this aspect of things. And I don't know, hopefully I can jump on a call with both of you separate to this and we can discuss.
Yeah, of course.
Any advice?
I mean, I think anything that you do, Keenan, is going to be, you know, there's the ambition is always one thing, but your ability to build communities is everything, and, you know, your personability, and you'll inspire a lot of people. I mean, endurance and resilience, again, the reason why your story resonated with me is, and I mentioned it to you, is like myself and Michael are both in recovery, and they're very different experiences to what, you know, you've had with regards to the medical episode, but we've both been in a situation where our life was going one way, and then due to a couple of dramatic interventions, be them by something from a different dimension, by the way, or otherwise, our lives have just taken a significant shift, and now everything is different. The world looks different, and it's impossible to go back to the way things were. Well, sorry, in recovery, it is possible to go back, but in terms of, like, once you know what's on the other side of the wall, right? Like, you don't ever want to go back, and I think it's fascinating what you managed to go through, and the feelings of guilt and worry around your family. And it's a really moving story. I'm going to finish on this question, which is slightly different, but do you regret the training at any point in terms of where it eventually led, you know?
No, I don't regret any of it. At the end of the day, if I didn't do what I was doing, the business wouldn't be at the point it's at. I wouldn't have been able to take a step back and bring in a business partner and be able to work on the business if I didn't do the work that I did do during them years. What I do regret is, well, I do and I don't, because they work hand in hand. And like I just said, I had to do it to be able to step. I wouldn't have been able to step back if I didn't do the work that I did, you know, to get the business to where it's at. And now my business partner, Andy, is doing a great job at doing the gym floor stuff and maintaining all of that. If I regret anything, not regret, but if I could have changed anything, it would maybe being home a little bit more for my son, my eldest, when he was first born. Because for me, like I said, I was so fixated on the dream and chasing this dream. I was out of the house early. I wasn't home for bath time. I wasn't home for story time. I wasn't home to watch him eat breakfast. And if there's anything I could have changed, I mean, I'm 26. I couldn't have done the gym any earlier than what I did. But if there's anything I could have changed, I'd have done the gym 10 years maybe before having the kid, so that when we did have my eldest, I could have been present a lot more when he was first born. Having said that, he's now six. I've been present for the last couple of years, a lot more present the last couple of years, and I am for my youngest. Obviously, the twins, I am from day one. So it's not a massive thing at all. But, you know, if I could have changed anything, it would have been to have been home a little bit more for my eldest when he was first born.
But listen, Keenan, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. And we really wish you well. I've no doubt that you don't strike me as somebody who is... I don't think this would be... I'm going to say... You're going to sound like one of those people, you know, who gets kicked off the X Factor earlier on. They're like, this is not the last you'll hear of me. I promise I'll be back, Simon. And it's like, you've never heard of them again. I guarantee you this is not one of those situations. I think it's... I think you're going to connect with a lot of people in lots of ways that you probably don't even know already, because it's you're really an interesting guy. The experience, it's almost like the experience had to happen to you. Do you know what I mean? And it's like there's that phrase where it's like you're only given problems that you can handle, you know. And your situation is fucking ludicrous and really interesting, but the way that you're dealing with it is inspiring. So look, thank you for your time, man. And yeah, we'll absolutely arrange another call. Not now or in the near future.
Never.
Yeah. I'll give my number to Michael. And yeah. No, but we will, he'll be in touch. We'd love to have another chat. And you know, I feel like, yeah, if you're in Dublin, we should do something, because it's just fascinating. And to see as life evolves, I don't think that the twins will be the first surprise. Do you know what I mean? I suspect there's lots of other interesting things coming around the corner for you.
Well, I hope not. And it's funny you say about Dublin, because Michael will tell you on our call the other day, and he mentioned it was a recorded. I said, oh, gutted. I thought I was going to get a trip to Ireland.
Yeah, no. Don't have the budget for that, mate. No.
I thought I was going to get a weekend away from the kids and the wife.
If you'd bloody completed the High Rocks, then we could have talked. Do you know what I mean? Lazy. No, I'm joking. Listen, I gotta go. Thank you so much. You've been an absolute gentleman, and we look forward to speaking to you very soon. We'll talk to you off air, but thank you so much, and take care of yourself. All right.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. Thank you for the opportunity.